Clean, safe, local. Your home for business is the Village of Bedford Park. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
12:03, Tuesday afternoon, December 17th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. There are ways to significantly cut your holiday costs through a little bit of strategic planning. We'll cover that in our next segment, but right now, it's a busy day of data with the latest numbers from retail and manufacturing, plus the latest gauge of home builder confidence. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Diane Swank, Chief Economist, KPMG in Chicago. Diane, thank you for joining us today. And let's begin by talking about the report on retail sales for the month of November. A lot of interesting trends inside the numbers, starting with there apparently was a run on cars in the month of November.
There absolutely was. It was the largest increase in vehicle and motor parts, 1 month increase since July. And remember, back in July, we were catching up after over 50,000 dealers were hacked and could not deliver the vehicles. So that was a big number. And a lot of it was driven by two factors, the 1-2 punch of people replacing vehicles and repairing vehicles damaged by those two monster hurricanes that we saw, along with we saw this odd trend where in the beginning of December, the consumer sentiment survey showed that consumers were buying ahead of what they saw as price hikes down the road, likely due to tariffs. Now that, you know, hoarding behavior is its own self-fulfilling prophecy and actually pushes up prices. And it's really created a bit of a whack-a-mole problem for the Fed that even as some prices cool, goods prices, which had been falling, and vehicle prices in particular, which had been falling, are now rising again.
And on top of the vehicle sales push in the latest report, a lot of hurricane-related repairs, trips to Home Depot to fix homes and other things damaged by those storms, that also appears to be driving the retail sales last month.
Exactly. We're seeing a lot of replacement demand. We've seen it in everything from appliances to furniture to electronics, all damaged by mud is very devastating, along with water and those repairs. We saw 2 months in a row of very strong gains in building materials and garden shops, and that was repairs. So that's clearly out there happening. What was also interesting, though, is that we saw consumers move online en masse and into big box discounters. Traditional retailers got kind of left out in the cold, and that's hard for them, along with clothing retailers. The holiday season is very compressed this year, and consumers are online and spending online, but they're also not going out as much. Restaurants actually had their largest decline since earlier this year. And what's so interesting about the decline in restaurants is we saw also a decline in spending on food, especially after adjusting for inflation at grocery stores as well. Some of that reflects the increase in diabetes drugs that we're seeing out there and people using it off-label to lose weight. But it also reflects the pinch that lower-income households are feeling from the surge in prices at the grocery store.
And then very quickly, home builder confidence steady, but it seems like home builders have some optimism about next year.
there's a lot of hope that next year that rates will come down further and that they'll be able to build a little more. There are some builders talking about speculative building. That would be good because we need the supply of housing. That said, it's not clear that rates will come down as much as they hope, and mortgage rates have been remarkably stubborn. Remember, the Fed is no longer buying mortgage-backed securities, and the spread between those long-term bond yields, which have also moved back up from their lows in September, has widened, and that has been a big hurdle. But it's not just interest rates. Let's face it, affordability has been hit by everything from home values, rising real estate costs, rising home ownership costs, and those home association fees. So it still is a tough market for the housing market next year, but there is some optimism we could get some more construction on the horizon.
Diane Swonk, Chief Economist, KPMG in Chicago, thank you for joining us today. Coming up, working ahead to cut the cost of the holidays next year.
Your best stock option. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
You can be ready for any occasion by starting a gift closet. It can save time, money, and hassle throughout the year. Joining us to explain is Jennifer Waters, Chicago-based business reporter. Jennifer, thank you for joining us today. And let's say a week from today, right? Or maybe 10 days from today. Let's just, so my math is 100% accurate. 10 days from today, we will be knee deep in holiday sales. Merchandise deeply discounted. The holiday rush is over and the stores want to get that merchandise out. And this is a very good opportunity for you to build up something known as a gift closet. Jennifer, what is a gift closet and what can you do with it?
Well, a gift closet is exactly what it sounds like. It's a closet full of gifts. And if you have a closet that you can, keep for that, that's great if you have that kind of space. But if not, even a box or a drawer, for that matter, would work. And that is just a place where you keep things that you can give as gifts. So, like, if I see something that I know my sister might want, and her birthday's not till next fall, I'll just go out and pick it up and put it aside and then, keep it for her or give it to her for Christmas, something like that. But also, you have last minute gifts for if you go to someone's house for dinner. I mean, I always try to bring something with me, whether it's a bottle of wine or any kind of liquor for that matter you can bring. But also if you've got kids. And I can't tell you how many last-minute birthday parties I found out about, and I was like, oh, wow, I don't have a gift. Well, if you have kids and you know what the gifts that those kids are going to want, you can kind of start buying that. And one of the things that you just mentioned, Rob, is about how everything's on sale. And that's the beauty of having a gift closet, because you can get everything as it goes on sale. And we're talking about skincare products, for example, or cosmetics, or candles. Candles go on sale like right after Christmas. We're going to get a lot of that. So all of those types of things you can put in there. But another thing to remember with your gift closet, that you should also have wrapping paper and tape and ribbon and cards. I used to have a drawer full of cards that ranged from birthday cards, new baby, wedding cards, sympathy cards, so that if I needed something last minute, I could just go and grab it. And the same with wrapping paper. I think most of us have a little bounty of wrapping paper somewhere in our homes.
Now, this is where I get to say that I am consistently amazed, Jennifer, by Mrs. Hart's ability to take advantage of those deals and build up a gift closet, especially for, as you mentioned, the kids are constantly being invited to a birthday party somewhere, and just a stockpile of kid-friendly presents that are age-appropriate because you know what everybody's into, so that way you're not stressing. And one other thing you can do, especially after the holidays are over, is load up on stuff for next Christmas. Get that deeply discounted wrapping paper and just hold on to it for a year, and then you can use it next year.
Exactly. And that's the same with even some kind of home decor and that kind of those kinds of things that go on deep, deep discounts after Christmas. Hold up for those. The problem with all of this, of course, is if you have the space. And like I said, if you have an extra closet, good for you. I don't. But I can find things in a box and stuff in the basement somewhere. So the other important thing about this, too, Rob, is that you need to keep some kind of inventory list, whether whether it's a kid list or a, you know, wedding gift or something like that, or, as I say, a gift from my sister, I need to keep some kind of inventory or I will forget. And it's really important that you remember what you have and where, and even you can even wrap some of it already and just make sure you put the name.
Well, and the other thing too, Jennifer, is you got to make sure the present from the gift box is not for a very important person in your life, and that still there's some forethought and some sort of emotional investment in it, and you're not just handing your significant other on an anniversary or their birthday, oh, by the way, here's a board game. It's from the gift box. Happy birthday.
Exactly, exactly. And that too goes back to sales. I mean, if you're looking for like a beautiful piece of jewelry and there's a big sale right around Valentine's Day or something, you can pick that up and stash it away for a birthday or a holiday.
Jennifer Waters, Chicago-based business reporter, thank you for joining us. Coming up next, dealing with a promotion that comes without a pay increase.
Lunch money for all generations. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
More work for the same pay. That's what's called a dry promotion, where added responsibilities increase stress, but not salary. Joining us with some advice on how to handle this is Rick Cobb, founder of the workplace consulting firm 2Discern in Chicago. Rick, thank you for joining us today. And this is another sign that the great resignation is probably over. And that is the era of you as the worker naming your price and making all sorts of demands because the job market was red hot. That is a trend that's come and gone.
Yeah, maybe. And I think that, by the way, I just got promoted to trophy husband. I don't know if I'm going to get paid more or not.
It's a nice T-shirt, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. So the issue is really more about the organization. There are plenty of businesses that are doing well, even though the economy may look generically to be somewhat in a downward trend. And I think you have to look at your role in the company and what that means. And the other issue is, has it already happened or is it about to happen? So we've got two different issues. If you've already been promoted and you've gotten no pay increase and you didn't have a conversation with your supervisor or boss about that, it's not too late to have that conversation. And you certainly don't want to draw a line in the sand and give them the idea that you're going to leave or that you're unhappy, but to say, hey, I really appreciate the trust that you've put in me, blah, blah, blah. Just curious as to how that will work in terms of compensation going forward. And then shut up and let them talk and see what happens.
Now, that also really depends on your relationship with your supervisor. I mean, some people may not feel comfortable having that conversation. And ironically, if you're not comfortable having that conversation, that's another conversation.
Sure. And there are certainly leaders who will take advantage of that. The human condition has a lot of drivers in it. And one of the things we're very much motivated by is status or the appearance of status. So the title, they may decide, and accurately, that it's going to be enough for you to get a title. You'll feel good about yourself. You'll be able to tell people at your cocktail party, hey, I'm now the VP of whatever. I'm the VP of Tuesday. But that's not going to change your compensation. And while it makes you more marketable for opportunities outside of the company that you're at, if it's a decent job, the human resources function is going to suss that out pretty quickly, because if your comp is three times lower than what that title reflects, then you're not really doing that job where there's something wrong, and that's going to make it problematic for you in the market.
Yeah, I was going to say, how are you able to frame this inside the business? Maybe they'll make it up to you later. And if you do want to explore other opportunities elsewhere, how can you massage that potential red flag?
Sure. Well, I think there's two ways to go. And so, again, we don't do no harm. You don't want to hurt your own career. You don't want to hurt your career with the job that you're in. And you don't want to hurt your opportunities as you go out into the market. So you really have to soft pedal that. One of the things that I'd always want my client to know is this a brand new job that didn't exist? Or is this something that has existed in the past? If it existed in the past, has there been any transition there? What did the people that were there make in the previous roles? Also, certainly what other people make in other companies. There are organizations, privately held companies, that just don't really know what someone should get paid. And they may actually own up to it once they find out. So you want to have that conversation with the person that you feel like you could have it with, who's not a threat to you, who will listen to you and is also not going to lower the boom on you for asking. And that conversation is going to be, hey, I'm really excited about what I'm doing. Here's what I understand my job to be. And here are the things that I do now that are different than they were before. I'd like to know what that means for me in the future in terms of additional compensation. And again, just be quiet, silent close.
Rick,
in the market. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, well, that's very good advice. And very quickly, though, I do want to just ask you, honestly, how often does this happen? Because, we're not recruiting talent as much as we were before, but we certainly want to hang on to talent. And clearly, if you're promoting somebody without a bump in pay, that's going to rankle that person, even if they get the lofty title.
I think it happens a lot, particularly in privately held, closely controlled companies, where it's more of a tribal sort of familial kind of situation. We're going to give good old Joe the title of VP. It doesn't really mean anything. He'll be happy. But, we're family run. All of the real executives have the same last name.
Rick Cobb, founder of the workplace consulting firm 2Discern in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today.
This is Chicago's news, traffic and weather station. News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. A fire at Trump Tower in Chicago appears to be under control. Police look for answers after a deadly school shooting in Wisconsin. In Travel Tuesday, numbers from Amtrak reflect increased interest in train travel. Colleges are acknowledging the viability of a career as a social media influencer. WBBM Business, the markets are lower. The Dow is down 339 points, NASDAQ down 67, and the S&P 500 down 27. 38 degrees right now in Chicago under partly sunny skies. It's 12:31, topping our news at the half hour. The emergency crews are on the scene of Trump Tower downtown following an apparent car fire in a parking garage. Roads have been closed around Wabash and Kinzie, although this does not appear to be anything serious. No word on any injuries at this point. Police are looking for more clues and a possible motive after yesterday's school shooting in Madison, Wisconsin.
Police say the shooter's family has cooperated with investigators as they look through items they seized from the home. Chief Sean Barnes tells CBS Mornings that social media has been full of posts about possible motives.
We'll look through her social media, talk to some of her friends, and really try to piece together how a 15-year-old was able to do something like this.
As to where the girl got the gun, Barnes says ATF is tracing its path, and he hopes to have more information later today. Peter King, CBS News.
It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. The markets are lower. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services. Find him online at horizoninvestment.com. Proud sponsor on WBBM. Chuck, thank you for joining us today. And the markets are lower once again. And this has been a rather lengthy, one might say, bears-like losing streak for the Dow.
Well, it has been lengthy. I wouldn't go quite to a bearish comment, but if the Dow Jones Industrial Average finishes down today, and it looks like it probably will, that would be 9 consecutive days. That would be the first time that the Dow Industrials have gone down 9 consecutive days since February of 1978. We're talking the Carter administration here. So, when you think about in those terms, boy, this is an historic decline in the Dow. When you look at the magnitude of it, though, it's pretty minor. I think the Dow's down since its December 4th high of around 45,000. It's down about 3.5%. And mind you, that's about half the gain that it had in November when the Dow went up about 7.5% for that month. So, this is a very traditional orderly in terms of magnitude decline in the Dow in terms of a correction within a bull market. But the consecutive days is obviously something that gets your attention.
Yeah, first off, for the sake of clarity, Chuck, I wasn't talking about a bear market. I was talking about the Chicago Bears. It's a losing streak that rivals the Chicago Bears. But my question, though, and you answered that, is the gains we saw after the election, it seems like it was inevitable that there would be a little bit of a pullback, that froth couldn't last forever.
Well, that's right. I mean, you know, people are kind of wondering, geez, where's our Santa Claus rally going? Well, you know, Santa Claus may have come early in November. Again, when you look at the returns of stocks post-election in the month of November, I mean, they were pretty solid across the board. The S&P had a nice run. Small cap stocks had a really nice run. And so, you know, we're kind of giving that back. And that's what corrections within bull markets do. They kind of pull back. Their purpose is to scare the heck out of investors. And, you know, you get 9 consecutive down days in the Dow. That's starting to generate a little bit of fear. And but, you know, the key thing is that, you know, these things happen. This one is still very typical and hasn't really even reached kind of extreme levels that you typically can see during bull market corrections.
And then how are investors preparing for the Fed policy meeting this week, especially the announcement tomorrow from Fed Chair Jay Powell? I mean, they're going to cut by a quarter of a percentage point, but they're talking about a hawkish cut now. So I guess the question is, everyone's be watching and waiting to see the degree to which he's sharpening his talons during that news conference.
Well, yeah, I think the fact that they're going to cut has been pretty well telegraphed, and I think the market is basically assuming that. If they don't, that would be a surprise for the market. I'm not sure that would be well received. I think the bigger issue now, given the fact that the economy still, you know, seems to be chugging along quite nicely, is, you know, what are they going to do next year? And, you know, I think there was an initial thinking there'd be, you know, 4 cuts next year. Now we're talking about maybe 2 cuts. And some people are kind of saying, you know, we may not get any cuts next year. And I think that's what the market is trying to weigh as we go into 2025. And I think, you know, that may be weighing a little bit on some of the economically sensitive areas of the market, which we have seen pull back more so in this last couple of weeks. Is like, you know, boy, those are the companies that would benefit most from a rate cut. And if we're not going to get a series of rate cuts in 2025, you know, it takes some of the steam out of those economically sensitive stocks.
Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services. Find him online, horizoninvestment.com. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up in Travel Tuesday, riding the rails to your next destination.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday. Train travel in America making a comeback, with some passengers viewing it as a cruise on rails. Let's explore some of the local, regional, cross-country, and luxury options with Juliet Huddy, travel vlogger and curator, JetSetJulietTravels.com. Find her online, JetSetJulietTravels. Juliet, thank you for joining us today. And there are a number of options if you want to take a long-distance train trip somewhere. But I feel like if you, the first one is Amtrak, and I've seen enough friends on social media who, and I want, in interest of full disclosure, Juliet, I'm a train guy, so I do want to sell the virtues of train travel to people, but they go on the Amtrak website and they think, oh, I'm going to take a long distance train. This is going to be North by Northwest. I'm going to be Cary Grant. She's going to be Eva Marie Saint. It's going to be a luxury train trip, you know, the 20th century limited to Chicago. And then you find out, well, there's just one train. It gets to the destination at 2:00 in the morning. What am I thinking about doing? And so there's a right way and a wrong way to go about booking a long distance train trip.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously you have to do your due diligence, but you're right. I mean, right now rail travel is percolating, and I think it's going to be huge, really huge in 2025 and beyond. And obviously up until the mid-1800s, I remember it well, the concept of tourism wasn't a thing because it was hard to get around. But then you had the burst of the railroad. All of a sudden, it wasn't just the rich and the powerful who were able to take, you know, vacations. It was normal peasants like us could too. And that lasted for about 100 years, but then you had airplanes and cars making train travel obsolete. But then less than 100 years later, trains are making a comeback. So here are some of the ones that I actually think that you guys would love. I know that I would love it. And I have done my due diligence, and I have had a lot of looked at a lot of ratings. Number one, some of the best rail journeys are right in our backyard in Chicago through Amtrak. And they're affordable. You've got the Empire Builder. This is a 2-day trip. It takes you from Chicago all the way out to Seattle. You go through the Great Plains in North Dakota, Big Sky Country, and Glacier National Park in Montana. Then you've also got the Zephyr, which goes between Chicago and San Francisco with a stop in Glenwood Springs, Colorado, where you can actually
get off, you take some time to chill in the hot springs there. Now, this is pretty affordable, but yeah, you got to make sure that you're booking the right seat. Fares start at about $150, but that's like you're sitting in a seat that reclines, okay, but they can go up to a few thousand if you get a private room, and there are kind of different levels. So it's something to look into. Another example, a little further away, this one gets huge, huge ratings. It's the Rocky Mountaineer. It's a two-day journey in a glass-domed carriage from Vancouver to Banff. I mean, there's actually a couple places that you could go, a couple routes, but that one to me sounds incredible. Banff just looks like a dream place. This includes gourmet meals. I mean, this is you're getting pretty highball here. Fares start around $1,500. Again, just for 2 days, but this is kind of a major step up from the Amtrak vibe. And then there's the height of decadence, my personal dream. If I don't get on this thing, like in the next year, I might as well just quit my job. It's the Simplon Orient Express, making a huge comeback. I mean, this is the epitome of luxury train travel. There are a couple routes between Venice and Paris, or Venice and London, or Paris and Portofino. I mean, I'm sure you've probably seen this if you're on Instagram. You know, that's like the 1920s vibe with the carriages, gourmet dining, breathtaking scenery. But here's the deal. It's a one-day journey, and it starts at $3,000. But so this is like, you know, bucket list stuff.
Yeah, it's very decadent, but who knows? You could solve a murder mystery potentially on board the Orient Express.
Honestly, I don't think I would have any interest in doing that. I would just be interested in having my cocktails and like pretending like I'm a really, really rich person. Like I'm back in the 1920s hanging out with the royals. I mean, it's my dream. But it's just a couple little things. Like you mentioned earlier, it's kind of like a cruise, but on land. You know, you board, you don't have to deal with your luggage again until you leave. And you just sit back and you sip your cocktail or sip, you know, your Diet Coke or whatever. And you see some of the world's most jaw-dropping scenery go by. And like you said, price-wise, you got a lot of options from budget to luxury. Trains are less of a carbon footprint than planes and cars, which is appealing to me. And then as all of us across the travel industry are seeing now, there is this trend for nostalgia. And hopefully I can expand on that the next time I come on the show. But like nostalgia, you can't get any bigger with trains.
Well, I was going to say very quickly, and this is an idea that I had. If you fly to New York, take the train back from New York to Chicago, because if you do it, especially during the summer, the Lakeshore Limited, one of the most beautiful vistas in the country, is that ride up the Hudson River up to Albany.
Oh,
and you get to dine, and the Hudson's on one side of the train, and that's an amazing sight. So maybe just, you know.
It's very historic. You know, it's very historic. You're going to be going through a lot of really, really important places in the development of this country.
Juliet Huddy, travel vlogger and curator, JetSetJulietTravels.com. I'll see you on the train. Thank you for joining us today.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Becoming a social media influencer is a growing career choice, and colleges have taken note, offering courses and degrees in the field. Let's learn more from Shelley Palmer, CEO of the Palmer Group, professor of advanced media in residence at the Newhouse School of Public Communication at Syracuse University. Shelley, thank you for joining us today. Now, at the very beginning, this may seem like an extravagance or a sign of a culture that is nowhere near as substantial as it once was. But functionally, how different? What's the difference between finding a degree and being an influencer and getting a degree in marketing and advertising?
It's a distinction without a difference, I think. Look, today we have capabilities available to us that no previous generation had. Distribution is global instantly via YouTube or any number of social video platforms, social media platforms. You've got an unbelievable number of sites from Shopify on down to help you do your e-commerce. You have all of the marketing tools you could ever possibly need and all of the analytics you could ever need. So in order to be great at this, there is a lot to know. Some of the people who were early influencers traded on their fame, but there is a massive multi-billion dollar set of cottage industries that have evolved, selling everything from cookies baked at home to woodworking to you name it. It is on sale on the internet. And so to learn to do this well, to learn to understand the analytics tools, the data science behind it, to make yourself a business as opposed to a hobby, there's a really good There's a good argument for courses. And in fact, at Syracuse, we are working on that as well. So it's every university, I think, is paying a lot of attention. And to your point, there is no difference between getting a degree in marketing and getting a degree in social media marketing, because they're both valid. Every major marketing department of every corporation is working in social media marketing and social video marketing and influencer marketing. And the influencers themselves, they need an education too.
And on top of that, even if you do not become an influencer yourself, if you know the tools of the trade, there are no doubt advertising firms, public relations firms, communication shops all need someone who can tell them the tools of the trade. So even if you can't do, you can always teach, and teaching can be very lucrative because everyone wants to crack that market.
To be fair, in order to do this, you have to want to generate content at a very, very regular cadence. You know how to do that, Rob. You do it every day. Like, you understand what that is. Not everybody understands the discipline required, especially on your own or in a small environment. So, yeah, learning these tools are critical. But also, you don't need to be a photogenic person. You need to have a product or a good or a service that is great. And if your product is good and you're honest about how to sell it, these tools are available to make it a business. And to be fair, every single day, the influencer marketing business, the actual home businesses of all kinds, you don't even want to just call them the content creator economy, influencers are always conflated. Lose all the jargon. You're basically running your own business with the tools available to you on the internet, and you can make quite a good living doing it. So, yeah, go get an education on how to do that. Or, by the way, you can also learn how to do it, because there's any number of people willing to teach you online right now.
Shelley Palmer, CEO of the Palmer Group, professor of advanced media in residence at the Newhouse School of Public Communication at Syracuse University. Thank you for joining us today.